ABC Listen. Podcasts, radio, news, music, and more.
Good morning. Welcome to AM. It's Wednesday, the 3rd of April. I'm Sabra Lane, coming to you from Nipaluna, Hobart. Israel's Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu is promising a full investigation into a strike on an aid convoy in Gaza, which killed seven aid workers, including an Australian. Mr. Netanyahu says it was unintentional. In a moment, you'll hear from Australia's Foreign Minister, Penny Wong. The aid group, World Central Kitchen, says its team had been travelling in a deconflicted zone when it was hit. Australian Zomi Franken was part of the convoy. Her family and friends say the 43-year-old had spent her life helping others. Correspondent Lauren Day is in Jerusalem. Lauren, Israel's promising a full investigation into the killings. What has Benjamin Netanyahu said?
That's right, Sabra. Benjamin Netanyahu was actually in hospital at the time that this happened. But when he was discharged this afternoon, he released a statement saying that, unfortunately, there was a tragic event in which our forces unintentionally harmed non-combatants in the Gaza Strip. He said, this happens in war, but that the government was conducting an urgent inquiry and would do everything to prevent a recurrence. The country's defence minister has also announced that it will open a joint situation room with international groups to help them coordinate and distribute aid in Gaza. But of course, the World Central Kitchen has said that despite coordinating movements with the Israeli Defence Force, the convoy was hit as it was leaving that warehouse. So it's really unclear how much of a difference that would make.
An Australian, three British nationals, a Polish citizen, a dual US-Canadian citizen and a Palestinian were among the dead. What has been the international reaction?
Well, it's been a swift and widespread condemnation. In the US, the White House spokesman John Kirby has said that the US understands that a preliminary investigation has been carried out, but that the US expects that a broader inquiry will be conducted with appropriate accountability, crucially. He said the United States is outraged over the strike and that Israel has an obligation to protect aid workers in Gaza and that the US will press Israel to do more to protect them. The US Secretary of State, Antony Blinken, also spoke. Here's what he had to say.
Spoken directly to the Israeli government about this particular incident, we've urged a swift, a thorough, and impartial investigation to understand exactly what happened. And as we have throughout this conflict, we've impressed upon the Israelis the absolute imperative of doing more to protect innocent civilian lives, be they Palestinian children, women, and men, or be they aid workers.
That's the US Secretary of State Antony Blinken and before him our correspondent Lauren Day in Jerusalem. The Foreign Minister Penny Wong joined me earlier. Penny Wong, good morning. You've spoken with Israel's Foreign Minister overnight. What's he said?
Well, can I first start by expressing my deepest sympathy and condolences of all Australians to Zomi's family. Australians are with you. We are mourning with you. We know that Zomi's life was a life dedicated to the service of others, and it is a tragedy what has occurred. I spoke to the Foreign Minister of Israel last night. I expressed the outrage of the nation. I said that the death of any aid worker is outrageous and it is unacceptable. I expressed the view that we expect full accountability for these deaths. We spoke about his intention to ensure that there was a thorough investigation.
Israel's defence minister said a professional team will investigate what happened. The United States has said that this must be impartial. Has Mr. Katz been explicit with you about how that inquiry will happen and who will conduct it and how transparent it will be?
We spoke about the importance of full accountability and transparency, and obviously we will continue to work with the Israelis on the detail of this investigation. What we expect is a transparent, full accountability for what has occurred, which is the death not only of this Australian, Zomi Franken, but also a number of other aid workers. No aid worker should die in this way, in a conflict zone. And it is, frankly, outrageous and unacceptable that this has occurred.
Benjamin Netanyahu has also spoken overnight saying that the killings were, and I'm going to quote here, a tragic event in which our forces unintentionally harmed non-combatants and that this happens in war. What's your response?
Well, international humanitarian law applies to Israel, and that law protects among civilians, and that law protects aid workers. I don't think this can be dismissed in any way, and we expect full accountability. I would say to you that the expectation of the Australian government is full accountability for these deaths.
Israel says it will now set up a joint situation room to coordinate with aid agencies their movements in Gaza. Does that assuage you, given that the World Central Kitchen said that this team had been coordinating with the military about their movements?
Yes, that is what I've read those reports as well, which makes this situation even more distressing. This has been a conflict which has been particularly fatal for aid workers. I note that the UN Secretary General said overnight some 196 aid workers have been killed in this conflict. This is unacceptable.
In 6 months, the figures are, I think, something like 32,000 people have died in Gaza. 74,000 have been injured. We don't know how many of them are Hamas combatants, but most of them probably aren't. How comfortable are you with that?
Not at all comfortable. I don't think anybody's comfortable with this conflict, with the civilian lives which have been lost, with the hostages who remain unreleased. As you said, more than 30,000 civilians have been killed. More than 500,000 Palestinians are starving. What we have said to the Netanyahu government directly is that they must change course. We've also said we support an immediate humanitarian ceasefire consistent with the UN Security Council resolution. And unlike Mr. Netanyahu, this government supports progress towards a two-state solution.
Israel has ignored those calls for a ceasefire. What do you think it will take for it to listen to what most of the world is saying and for that to happen?
Well, what I would say to Israel, and I have said this publicly and I have said this privately, that unless Israel changes course, it will continue to lose support. And certainly the tragedy that you and I are discussing will further damage Israel's stand.
The Australian Greens say that the Prime Minister should be held accountable for this as well. It says that the United States is about to send fighter jets to Israel that contain Australian parts and that jets will be used to kill innocent people, that Australia should end arms sales with Israel. What's your response to that?
I think all Australians will look at the way in which the Australian Greens are trying to make this a partisan political issue in the light of such a tragedy very dimly. The Australian Greens know what the government has said, which is we are not exporting arms to Israel. The Australian Greens continue to seek to politically utilise this conflict here in Australia, and I think it does them no credit.
Do you worry about the community hanging together in Australia on this, given that we are seeing quite extreme views on both sides?
Yes, I do, which is why the actions of the Greens and, frankly, others are so detrimental to the fabric of Australian society. And we are an extraordinarily diverse country. We have people whose heritage comes from all over the world. One in two of us is a parent born overseas, always born overseas. Part of what has held us together is we have held on to some central values around our democracy, around respect, recognising that we don't all agree, but how we express that and how we engage matters. I am concerned about the way in which some politicians have been using this conflict in a way that is detrimental to that social fabric. And I think all of us need to take greater responsibility. This is an awful war. And as you said, we've seen some in excess of 30,000 people who have died, and we know that people are starving. And what we must do is continue to hold the position Australia always holds, which is we say to Israel, you must comply with international law, including, if I may say, the recent decision of the ICJ to ensure without delay the delivery of aid at scale. And here in Australia, we must work to hold our community together when people are grieving.
Penny Wong, thank you for talking to AM.
Good to speak with you.
Penny Wong is the Foreign Minister. Let's hear more now about Zomi Frankem, and about the risks aid workers face working in Gaza trying to deliver aid and food to Palestinians. This report from Annie Guest and Nick Grimm.
Raised in Sydney, 43-year-old Zomi Frankham was a dedicated aid worker who Mark Purcell from Australia's Peak Humanitarian Group says had been in several crisis situations.
She was very brave doing this humanitarian work. It's a small community in Australia that put themselves into risky situations to deliver life-saving assistance in conflicts and natural disasters.
Zomi Frankham was among seven aid workers delivering food and other supplies to northern Gaza when they were killed by an apparent Israeli airstrike. Her employer, World Central Kitchen, says they were in cars branded with the charity's name. It's outraged the Australian Council for International Development's CEO, Mark Purcell, who says there are among about 200 aid workers killed during this conflict.
Zomi, really, her death was needless. She was working as part of a US charity, World Central Kitchen, with the permission of the Israeli Defence Force delivering assistance into northern Gaza.
The Israeli Defence Force says it has been working closely with World Central Kitchen in their efforts to provide aid to people of Gaza, and it's reviewing the incident at the highest levels. The Australian government has demanded an explanation from Israel, calling in the ambassador to justify what Prime Minister Anthony Albanese has described as an unacceptable tragedy. Mark Purcell is urging stronger action.
We want the Australian government to call out that people starving to death in 2024 in a conflict is totally wrong, and it must come to an end, and work with other allies to prevail upon the Israeli government.
Professor Ben Saul from the University of Sydney is an expert in international law. He's also the United Nations Special Rapporteur on Human Rights and Counterterrorism. And he says aid workers are entitled to special protection when working in conflict zones.
Under international humanitarian law, there is always an obligation on all of the parties to respect and protect humanitarian personnel.
And along with Prime Minister Anthony Albanese's demands of full accountability, Professor Saul argues Australia could go further.
If Australia is not satisfied with the thoroughness and independence and impartiality of the Israeli investigation, of course Australia would be entirely within its rights to respond with sanctions on Israel.
Professor Ben Saul from the University of Sydney, ending that report from Annie Guest and Nick Grimm. Alice Springs residents are exploring a range of solutions to the town's youth crime problem during the two-week curfew, with some questioning the role of social media. The Northern Territory government says it's considering whether posting about crimes on social media should be made a criminal offence, a move being taken in other jurisdictions. But one expert says it won't address the underlying causes of youth crime and could be difficult to enforce. Gavin Coote reports.
Alice Springs' crime problem has left many locals feeling weary and on edge. But it's the posting of it on social media that's adding insult to injury.
People's older siblings and cousins are doing it, and they just take the little kids along with them and they just run amok with them too, you know.
15-year-old Katie Mulrich has, like many of her peers in high school, seen how local crimes are filmed and shared on platforms TikTok and Instagram.
Sometimes they go to the shop and post everything they stole from the shop, and it's just making everyone else look stupid and like criminals. And they'll post like that they stole a car or they broke into people's houses and nothing gets done. That's why they keep posting about it and keep thinking it's good to do stuff like that.
As the young people of Alice Springs remain under a two-week curfew, 14-year-old Aranda man Maitland Campbell shares those frustrations about how some of his peers are using social media.
So most of them film while they're in the cars and like while they're stealing stuff, and like they might think it's all good and all, but it's still giving us a bad name as like us, people of our art, like Alice Springs.
The act of posting and boasting is something the Northern Territory Police Commissioner Michael Murphy argues is actually fueling crime both in Alice Springs and elsewhere.
I think it's planting the seed for ideas too. So it's a communication method that's, you know, it feeds boredom. So when people, they get a methodology about how to do certain acts, how to steal cars, what to do, and They're increasing the tempo of what type of crimes they commit.
The Queensland government recently brought in tougher penalties for car thieves who post footage of their offending, and the New South Wales government is planning similar laws. The NT government is now considering following suit, with Police Minister Brent Potter flagging there could be some hurdles.
We just need to make sure that when we whatever we bring in can actually deal with the individual and who owns that account, because the last thing you want to do is bring in a law that we can't actually use because we can't confirm who owns the account.
But Dr. Belinda Barnett, who's a senior lecturer in communications with Swinburne University, cautions against singling out social media platforms.
In the sense of regulating social media, the post and boast laws could potentially be effective in New South Wales, and perhaps you could consider implementing something along those lines in the Northern Territory. I don't know that you can say there's a direct relationship between TikTok and the incidence of youth crime, but what it does do is provide a platform for young people to kind of post and, boast about the crimes that they've engaged in.
The Northern Territory government hasn't set a timeline on when it'd move ahead with tougher penalties for social media use. Its curfew on Alice Springs is scheduled to finish next Wednesday.
That report from Gavin Coote and Charmaine Allison, and AM has contacted TikTok for a response. Banks are being put on notice to better look after customers who are going through financial hardship. New figures from the financial regulator show complaints from customers in budgetary difficulty increased by 25% last year. Alison Branley reports.
When her fixed-term loan expired, Mim Fox's mortgage repayments shot up $1,200 a month.
I was really thinking about this all the time. It became a very stressful period of my life.
But when the Sydney woman went to the local branch of her bank for help, she was told to fill out a generic form online. Mim Fox never heard back.
I was effectively cut loose by the bank to just go and survive and struggle on my own.
The single mother is one of a rising number of Australians struggling to get help when they ask their bank for financial hardship assistance. New data from the Australian Financial Complaints Authority for 2023 shows a 25% rise in financial difficulty complaints. Of more than 5,300 complaints, a third were about home loans. David Locke is the authority's chief ombudsman and says it's getting 500 calls a month from Australians with complaints about hardship assistance.
And in over half of these situations, people have gone to the bank or financial institution themselves and they've sought help and they've not even had a response to that request. So that is deeply concerning to us.
He wants to see financial institutions drop their cookie-cutter responses and says under national codes they must tailor hardship requests to individual needs.
We're calling on all lenders, including the banks, but also credit card companies, payday lenders, buy now, pay later providers, anybody providing credit, to do much better in this space.
David Locke says the regulator ASIC is currently conducting a review into hardship applications.
If there are failures, then the regulator has a whole range of actions that it can take, including fines and litigation.
The National Debt Helpline also says calls to its service are up 17% compared to last year, and the rising cost of living is to blame.
We're seeing people just absolutely drowning and overwhelmed at the moment.
That's Dominic Mayrick, the co-chief executive of Financial Counselling Australia, which runs the helpline. She says its counsellors dealt with nearly 15,000 calls in February, with mortgage stress and rental arrears a key concern. Dr. Mayrick wants banks to offer customers tailored hardship responses, which can include paying smaller amounts over a longer period or giving customers a break from payments altogether.
A good hardship response can mean the difference between a person's financial situation spiralling out of control and people getting things back on track. In the end, having good hardship practices is in the interests of both people or consumers and the organisation. Organisations are more likely to get some payment and to maintain the trust and loyalty of the customers that they're there to serve.
Mortgage payer Mim Fox refinanced with another institution and is now paying less.
Alison Branley reporting, that's AM for today. Thanks for your company. I'm Sabra Lane.
Hi, I'm Melissa Clark from the ABC News Daily podcast. In Alice Springs, a 14-day curfew has been imposed on the town's young residents following armed riots and escalating trouble. Today, ABC Alice Springs reporter Lee Robinson on the cycles of violence in the Northern Territory and whether this stopgap measure will make a difference. Look for the ABC News Daily podcast on the ABC Listen app.